Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, September 21st, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay, and I, of course, am Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line at thisshowissogay@aol.com, strolling on over to thisshowissogay.com to check out all the fun things happening with our dog and pony little gay show, listen to past shows, subscribe on iTunes, whatever you want to do that our website allows, which might be limited for you. And, of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, click like, because that means you like us, and we'll return it because we like you. Jam-packed show, it feels like, as always, lately, so let's get started with our first guest. Hey, first guest, are you ready?
I am ready.
Oh my gosh, this is good. So what normally happens, first guest, is that I write my own bios. I've been writing bios for our guests for years. Never before in the history, three-year history of this show, the hundreds of guests, have I gone to a guest website and they just had one sentence. They had a one-line bio. Did you know that you have a one-line bio on your website?
I have a one-line bio followed by like a seven-paragraph bio right below it.
It was so exciting. There was so much to choose from. So I'm going to read everybody the one-line bio. Please welcome to the show Will Clark, who produces and MCs the popular cult show, The Will Clark Show, at Pieces on Wednesdays. And he leads a mostly fabulous life, mostly, but that doesn't say enough. He's an actor, he is a philanthropist, he is an all-around fun guy. Will Clark, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Well, thank you so much. I want to date me, because you make me sound really awesome.
Well, if you go to Pieces on Wednesday nights, there is that opportunity.
Oh, my God, I'm going. I'm going to be there tonight on September 21st, 2011.
Nice.
I'm going to meet the host. He's fantastic.
And I heard the host also has this really strong modesty streak.
Well, this is apparently what I've been told. I'll have to find out firsthand.
Oh, Will, so much to talk about. Sir, are you ready?
I am more than ready. I was born ready.
Nice. And you got up early this morning.
I got up really early because I went to the gym, and I had some coffee, and then I had some coffee, and then I had some coffee. So I'm really awake.
All right. We like our guests caffeinated. It makes for fun shows. So let's go all the way back. Somehow this whole Will Clark experience started in Wisconsin.
Yes, the dairy state.
And do I make a joke there? Do I let listeners do it on their own?
I would love to hear whatever you have to say, because I'm cataloging them, and someday there'll be a book that'll be like, everything that everybody's ever said about Wisconsin, and here's the list.
Well, tell us the real deal, because I've never been to Wisconsin, and I'm sure a huge chunk of our listeners have never been to Wisconsin. It is indeed, and I looked this up for our listeners who are wondering, I looked it up, it is indeed a state. They did join the union.
They did their own, I think, in the mid-1800s sometime.
There you go. So,
I think it was 1849, if I remember my history right.
So what was that like for you, Wisconsin?
Well, Wisconsin was really beautiful. And, you know, all kidding aside, it was a really beautiful place to grow up. I grew up in a very tiny town on the Wisconsin River. It was a paper mill town. And my mom and dad had a home on the edge of a forest. And there was just acres and acres of lawn, trees, and fields, and, you know, many years later now, there's sort of homes back there, but when I was growing up, there was some homes down the road, but in back of our house, there's just nothing. There was fields and trees and the river. And it was really great, because I liked bike riding as an adult, and I certainly did as a kid. And it was really a great place to be from. You know, when they say escape to Wisconsin, what they really mean is escape from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of opportunities, especially when you grow up in the 70s and become an adult in the 80s. There's not a lot of options and opportunities for a gay, artistic, intelligent, outgoing person to, like, do a lot. Especially when one's family is really not excited about the fact that you're any of those things.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah, they were not excited about any of that list, not just the gay thing, but kind of everything. They were just not happy. You know, it was a beautiful place, and when I hear about other people's growing up and how kind of, you know, very experienced it is, and people who grew up in the middle of the city or grew up in the suburbs, I actually really appreciate, in retrospect, my growing up, being able to be in the country and being from a small town and having small town values, and you know, that's kind of actually served me well in my adult life.
Are there nights at pieces where you sit there and think, where you can just close your eyes and pretend that you're in Wisconsin because it really conveys that?
Well, there's when I was a kid, I used to pretend that I would have my own show. So it's sort of like it's like the five-year-old's dream has come true, and now I have the show I've always wanted from when I was a kid. You know, the guests are not quite what I thought they would be.
Yeah,
the guests aren't really, you know, who I thought they would be. I thought, oh, I'll be Johnny Carson, and they'll be, you know, I'll have all the fabulous Hollywood people. But I have some pretty fabulous people as it is. I have some TV stars, some drag queens, porn stars, strippers. I have one of the best things about the show is that I'm able to showcase a lot of up-and-coming singers. So we've had everybody from established stars like Josie Cotton, who sang "Are You Queer," Johnny, "Are You Queer,"
right?
And Anaya Day, who sings "Horny," yeah. "Horny," "Horny," "Horny,"
yes.
You know that song. And we've had that level of people. I'm always excited, but I also really love it when we have people who nobody really knows, and it's their first or second or tenth gig, and they're just excited to have an audience because we're a very easy crowd to please.
Yes.
We've had a couple cheap drinks. We're in a good mood. We're playing bingo. We're raising money for a great organization. So everybody's in a really great mood, and they'll pretty much listen to just about anything and give everybody their 5 minutes. It's a little bit like American Idol or The Gong Show, where it's not like The Gong Show. It's like American Idol, where you kind of listen and you have a good smile and you do enjoy it for what it is, and sometimes it's great, and sometimes not so much, but the joy is that you've discovered somebody new, and that's something that I kind of really like doing, and I like discovering new people, and that's kind of fun for me. So
I will say that I have met many a suitor. Oh, God, I need to be careful with this one. I've met many a suitor bonding at pieces over a bad karaoke performance.
Yeah. Well, we...
How was that? Was that diplomatic?
That is really diplomatic. I'm really impressed. The Tuesday Night Karaoke has a huge following, and certainly the time of karaoke has been fantastic. We don't really do karaoke. We
right.
have people who come in and actually do performances. And, and we've had everything from hip-hop to pop to cabaret to... there was a woman who does... I really don't even know how to categorize this. She's a performance artist out of Los Angeles, and she does sort of an odd kind of cabaret-ish sort of... It's very odd, and it was a very odd thing to listen to, but everybody loved it so much because it was so odd that we'll have her back when she comes back to New York the next time. But, so it's really exciting to have those people, and although I have to tell you, the best guests that I've had in the 6.5 years have to be the two women that I had who were on One Life to Live.
Oh, fantastic.
Because I'm a not-so-closet secret soap opera fan, and One Life to Live is one of the shows I watch. And back when I was a kid and Ryan's Hope was on, this actress, Eileen Kristen, was the bad girl. She was Delilah, and she was this Delia. She was this bad, bad girl. And she left, and she came back, and she left, and she came back, and then, some years went by, and she's now on One Life to Live. She's been there for, 10, 11 years. And I couldn't believe I had her on my show. It was amazing to sit on stage with this person that, I've seen on my television, and she's sitting a foot away from me. And the kind of scary and slightly disturbing thing is that I actually knew enough about her career that I could intelligently ask her questions for 2 hours.
Right.
And she was a wonderful storyteller, and I managed to hit all the right points and, talk about stuff, and which would just spur these wonderful stories. And it was really quite mesmerizing, and she was just a terrific, terrific, terrific guest. And, there's moments like that when you leave the show at the end of the night, and sometimes you feel, wow, that was not good. Or sometimes you feel, wow, that really worked out well. I'm very excited. That was the night when I was literally basking and glowing because it had gone so well. She had fans come out. We had soap press there. Randy Jones from the Village People, I was on the show with him at the time. He came out with a bunch of cast members right towards the end of the evening, and he did YMCA. So it was really like this extravaganza that I kind of almost didn't really plan it to be, but it was one of those happy accidents that sort of happens at Bingo a lot. And I'm very grateful when the universe sort of bestows that on us. So,
see, I have to tell you, this is why I do radio, though, because I have those moments, but the guests can't see me drooling. So it works out really well for me. This is why I don't do it guests in the station, because if I have the Indigo Girls in the station, they might be looking at me thinking, why is he drooling? So they can't see it when I'm talking to them.
Yeah, I have some of those problems too, and it's partly the, oh my God, you're my idol, or I'm such a fan, and you're sitting next to me, and I'm talking to you, and we're having an actual conversation in front of people. So it's partly that, but it's also partly having sexy people on stage that I just think are incredibly hot.
There you go.
And like I had TJ Kelly from the A-List a few weeks ago, and, you know, I was very nervous because, you know, the A-List has, you know, it's a certain kind of show.
Uh-huh.
Is that me being diplomatic now?
Very.
It's a certain kind of show with a certain kind of sensibility, and it's not necessarily our sensibility at the Will Clark Show. So I was nervous about the mashup with that and how that would kind of happen. But he couldn't have been lovelier, and he was so much fun and such high energy and such a great guy and totally, like, flirting with me the entire time.
Nice.
And, you know, but I think red on red action is actually against the laws of the universe. So I think that we can't, like, we could never do anything.
Okay.
I think the universe would cease to exist if two redheads, you know, like got it together. So
I think that might be a Wisconsin law, but again, I need to do more research. I need
well,
to look into it.
Changed in the last 40 years. It used to be a very progressive state, and it's become a little bit, a lot less progressive as time has gone by, which I find very sad. But I guess these things kind of have pendulum swings of the politics.
I would love to talk about, do you hear people talking about the A-List there? Because I would imagine it's quite the divisive show there in the New York City gay community.
That's such a great question because, you know, it was one of those weeks, you know, I book weeks in advance and, you know, like any show, like you have this show and you book a guest and, but sometimes there's just dates that you can't book for some reason.
And wait, Will, we should just say, we should tell people, if they don't know what the A-List is, the A-List of New York is a show on Logo that is kind of a ripoff of Real Housewives of New York City, but with gay guys who some could argue some of them don't do anything but look pretty, just some of them. I think one could make that argument. I'm not making it for them.
I believe that is a valid argument that one could make.
Perhaps someone might use the word vapid. Not me. I'm just saying that there is that possibility.
And
that said, they should all be on our show. You know, we want them all on our show. But yeah, so this is a show that's on Logo. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a great show. It's actually a lot of fun. And I'm actually, now after meeting TJ, now I actually kind of want to watch it more. And
he's
sort of
different.
Examine it. He's quite charming. And,
yeah.
And you know, it's makes me want to give a second look. But I got a lot of divisive comments, which I was actually shocked by because I kind of booked him at the last minute through a variety of circumstances, and I was a little bit rushed. I had like 3 days to basically promote him, so I was on Facebook and telling people, and I got comments, and it was totally 50-50. Half people were like, wow, he's adorable, he's cute, I can't wait, I'm going to be there. And the other half were like really savage, and I was shocked.
Yeah.
You know, how savage the comments were about it. And they extended that then to me and the show, which I was kind of also surprised that, you know, they made a big judgment about my values having him as a guest.
Hmm.
And I've never had a guest that had quite that much, I don't think controversy really is the best word, but it's close enough.
Isn't that interesting?
It's very fascinating to me. Like, porn stars, no controversy. Drag queens, no controversy. One Life to Live people, no controversy. But TJ.
But TJ, who's not even, he is not even, like, the, you know, TJ's not, again, TJ, please call into our show, but he's not, like, the buff. You know, TJ's kind of the sidekick.
But I think it was just that it was the A-List, and the A-List is really made, I mean, anytime you have, it's such a thing in the gay community, I think it's sort of more East Coast New York than it is West Coast or Midwest, where you have a certain love and desire to be of a certain status. Mm-hmm. And so a show like The A-List sort of feeds into that desire. And, of course, if you're not on The A-List, or if you don't believe that there should be an A-List, or, you know, that whole sort of value system, then, of course, you're naturally against the whole concept from the beginning.
Right.
And from what little I've seen of the show, it doesn't really alleviate any of those kinds of concerns or things. And, you know, look, gay men, we have been, as gay men, at least certain of a certain age, because I can't speak for younger people, but I can speak from my own experience as this 40-something mumble-mumble guy, uh-huh. gay guy, where, you know, we face so much discrimination from outside for all of our lives, for our families and friends and job, you know, people who hire and everything like that, and through the political system, that the last thing we really want to do is turn on ourselves and create this hierarchy where you are the haves, we are the have-nots, and we get all the special perks because we are the A-list. And
right.
I don't even know entirely what that means, other than I think somebody just decides on their own that they're on the A-list.
Oh, well, no, I think it actually, there is an equation. It's A-list, which connotes directly to someone coming over and spray tanning you.
Oh, my God.
That's
really?
What
like
I've learned from the show. I'm
oh,
telling
wow.
you. I mean, it's
wow.
not like I've seen every episode. Oh, wait, I have. And people get really angry. And I don't know. We do a lot on the show, and we talk to all the leaders of the lobbying organizations, and we're doing our fair share on this show to promote equality and to make a difference in the world. And I am not for any second saying that the A-list of New York is who we all want to be as a community. But I kind of like the part where, yeah, the gay community has this part of us as well, the vapid, not-so-aspirational group.
Well, it's certainly not politically correct in any kind of sense. It's not
no.
it's not a democratic thing, and it's just very sort of self-serving and ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think to a degree, and certainly having the conversation in person with TJ, you know, who it just seems like such a genuine and nice guy.
Absolutely.
It sounds like at least he and perhaps other people who are involved in the project kind of know that there's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge
yeah.
about the whole thing, and that there's a certain air of, we know this is ridiculous, but it's just mindless entertainment and we don't care.
Exactly.
And I think that if we as the gay community have evolved to a point where we can be okay with being vapid and, you know, I call it sort of the Walmart gay.
Okay.
Syndrome, which is, you know, back in the day, it was the people who were outrageous and crazy who were out, right? Because
right.
they couldn't be in; they only could be out,
right.
And they were the first drag queens and the first people who were out, and the activists and all those people who paved the way to make what we have now happen, make it possible. And then there was like sort of. The second wave of people who were, you know, in the 70s were like, woohoo, I'm gay. I don't have to marry anybody anymore just to please my mom. Great.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people went to Christopher Street and to Castro Street and just had sex for 10 years.
Right.
And then there's sort of my wave, which was sort of like coming out and kind of feeling it's normal and, you know, going through the normal rites of passage of coming out and, you know, dealing with family stuff and getting a job and having a life.
Right.
But, you know, there still was sort of a aspect of certainly my life of coming out, which was seen, I think, by my family, certainly, of being bold and crazy. And now, you know, like we've had gay people on TV, in movies. It's such a, we are such a part of the fabric of American culture and world culture that now people who aren't outrageous, aren't necessarily maybe even creative, and, you know, aren't the body beautiful, aren't the A-list, now they feel comfortable coming out. It's the Walmart gays. It's the guys who aren't concerned that they shop at Walmart because they don't need to go to the high-end stores. They don't want to go there. That's not their interest level. And I think that's really awesome. I think that's a really terrific advancement that it's
yeah.
not just the guys who are thin with a 29 waist who are on the cover of, you know, a gay magazine, and that's what we are aspiring to. It's like, oh, no, it's the guys who are sort of overweight and kind of plain-looking and, like, normal and... have blue-collar jobs or, you know, are struggling or, you know, they're a lawyer or they're a doctor or whatever. They're just, they're the Walmart gays. They go to Walmart and they shop for their things just like they would have if they were a straight guy.
Or they live in Vermont.
Now they live in Vermont, or they live in Cincinnati. They live in, you know, some town in Ohio, in Iowa. And I think that's really, I think that's more important than we really, really give it credit for.
Yeah.
Because it's not just you have to live in the West Village, you have to live in the Castro. That time is way gone. We don't have that anymore, and that's not necessary. Because I think the rest of the country is so much more open to things than it ever was, certainly than it even was 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, that was our little A-list of New York detour, which I appreciate because
I
can't talk about it here, Will, because here I think the A-list is a sign language program in town, and they just wouldn't know what I'm talking about. I'm just saying.
You're in Brattleboro, is that correct?
I am in Brattleboro.
And how is the water? Is it has finally receded?
The water has, and it's not even a metaphor. The water has receded, and people have. Well, now people are starting to hole up because the weather's starting to turn. So trust me, I'll be down in New York next week.
Well, it'll be great to meet you sometime.
I want to talk about fundraising.
Oh, fantastic. I love talking about fundraising.
And I hopefully am not outing you because I could have checked with you before I said this, but one of the most interesting things in our exchanges online before we get to talk now on the air was you gave mention of that you've received in the past pushback to fundraising that you've done. And I have to tell you, I've actually experienced that as well from some agencies that, of course, we don't name on the air, that choose image over money and support and raising awareness.
Yeah, it's a really interesting phenomena.
Tell me.
Back in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, I started doing fundraising within the parameters of the adult industry. I've been doing movies,
mm-hmm.
and I was appearing at bar fundraisers and got on the microphone and started emceeing and then started producing them and started getting my friends to come and started creating events. So it was all sort of very playful and fun, and it was within an organization, Aid for AIDS, which is still in business, I believe, in West Hollywood.
Okay.
It provides direct aid to people who aren't able to work for one reason or another due to their health issues, and so they provide short-term financial aid, you know, so you can pay your light bill and or your rent or that kind of thing. And it's a great sort of temporary short-term solution to a larger problem. And it was really great. If we raised $1,000 in an afternoon at a beer bus, it was great because that meant that somebody could pay their rent that month. And, you know, it's really nice when you know this money equals this for this person.
Right.
But as time went by, you know, I was expanding, doing things for other organizations, and I would go city to city and do strip appearances. And it was kind of shocking to me because I would always offer, like I'd say, I'll strip Friday and Saturday night, and then Sunday I'll do a free performance. I'll do a free afternoon beer bus, MC it. I'll bring some giveaways, and we'll raise some money for your local organization, preferably an AIDS organization.
Right.
And it was really fascinating to me that there were some organizations that were like, we cannot be associated with gay porn. And I thought that was, you know, and this is where my own, you know, narrowness comes in. It's like, I thought, oh, well, this is just because it's outside of the big city. This is a smaller town. This is smaller, you know, mill-sized cities. And that's why it is. Until Aid for AIDS had a shift in management, and they decided that the Bad Boys pool party, which featured like 20 gay porn stars frolicking around a pool, wasn't part of the portfolio that they really wanted to have anymore. I think that's a polite way of saying all of that.
Okay.
And so I shopped the party around to various other organizations, and I was given, this is in Los Angeles, and I was given such an awakening, such an eye-opening of how many organizations in town said, I love your party, I go to it, I think it's a great thing that you're doing, but my organization could never be associated with that party.
Mm.
And I would be like, well, it's not a sex party.
It's
guys signing pictures. You know, it's basically like a soap event, except it just stars porn stars, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I know that it's not completely G-rated, but you know, the intent is actually that it's G-rated. And it was really interesting, the, you know, gay men running organizations telling me we can't be associated with sex. And my response to them was, do you understand how people get AIDS? It's actually through sex.
Right.
Do you not know that? Because that's what I have always been. So, I mean, you know, there's a couple other ways of transmission, but that's the primary one.
Yeah.
And it was really an eye-opener to me how that happened. And when I moved to New York and started doing bingo, and we have a different charity every week, it's really been surprising to me. Actually, most organizations are really great. There's been a few along the way that have said directly, and usually, they're, ironically and oddly, they are AIDS organizations.
Huh.
And at all of my events, we feature videos, DVDs that feature safer sex. And so we're not, I mean, there was a whole brouhaha like 10 years ago at one of my parties where it was a whole controversy where we had a bareback video star who wanted to appear. And I said, like, well, it's kind of counter to the message that we're sending,
right,
you know, to benefit an AIDS organization,
right,
if we have a star from a movie that glorifies unsafe sex and eroticizes it. And I said, you can't see that, right? And they're like, no, I don't get it.
Huh.
And it was truly like a huge conversation that people had. And I literally just shook my head and went, I don't understand you. So, you know, flashing forward to New York and, you know, doing my show and approaching organizations, you know, it's shocking then to me that I've had to have the conversation like, well, we give away porn, but it's all safer sex. And we really encourage people to be responsible with their partner and talk about their status and, you know, beforehand and, you know, and make your decisions that way and do all this kind of thing. And we want to show, we want to give away stuff that really encourages safer sex decisions. You know, and I don't want to make a big judgment call about like what people should or should not do in their private life.
Right.
But, you know, that's a decision that I made as a producer that I would feature only those movies. And still, that's sort of still, I guess it doesn't really matter to some degree to some of these organizations because it's still pornography. But I find it hilarious that there's one organization in town that will remain nameless that does a lot of very sexy events, and yet there's been pushback about coming to bingo.
Oh.
I'm like, well, the event that you produce every year is basically porn, except there's no insertion.
Right.
And I find it, I you know, and I don't, I'm not even mad about it. It's just sort of like fascinating to me that there's like this odd disconnect in our community between sexual issues within the gay community and AIDS and sex and barebacking and all the stuff that it kind of brings up with, for people. I find it endlessly fascinating because it just shows how complex desire and sexuality really is, and it shows really kind of how screwed up Americans are, gay or straight, male or female, how sort of fundamentally
yeah.
screwed up we really are on sexual issues and sexual politics. I mean, it's the old trope of on TV, it's okay to show people getting blown away on an action adventure, on a cop show, but you can't show two people of the same gender making out.
Right.
And that, you know, that, I mean, of course, and we all know that, but it really plays out in larger ways within our own community. And, you know, we're all struggling to be accepted and we're all struggling to make our way in the world. And so we're all working it out. So I had tremendous patience and tremendous forgiveness for people being and ridiculous. But, and, you know, and I, like I say, I used to kind of get annoyed and upset by it. And now I've kind of taken it with a grain of salt and, you know, just go, okay, well, call me for policy changes, and,
exactly.
you know, I move on to the next organization.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's fine. But it is odd to me. It's such an odd kind of thing, kind of position to take.
Yeah. No, I really, I've had that experience, and I'm just incredulous, and I get over it, but it's like, wait, you're saying, you know what you're saying is you're not going to take the money that I'm raising, and as I'm raising awareness for your organization, no, you're, okay, I'm going to move on then. So,
yeah.
Well, we
anyway.
Do have to talk about your musical selections for this week's show. You're
oh, my God. Which one did you choose?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
Because, Will, and perhaps I didn't prepare you for this either, this is the part of the show, Will Clark, where you tell our listening audience what some of your musical selections say about Will Clark. A little self-analysis for the listening masses.
oh my God, I gotta get to the living room so I can get on the couch and lay down. So
this is perfect. Like I should be you can doing. Even talk in third person. I find that this works well when that happens. You
well,
ready?
It's very clear with Will Clark.
No, Will, I didn't say the accent. I didn't say there was an accent to this segment.
I was
segment.
Trying to do a Freud accent. Please, give me some artistic license here. So which three did you
All right, well, here we go. So we're going to start. This is one of my favorite songs, too. I love that you – this. We've never played this in 3 years on the show. What does the Supremes' I Hear a Symphony say about Will Clark?
Well, it's you know, it's a song. I grew up with an older brother and sister. My sister was 8 years older, so I was exposed to 60s music. I was exposed to 60s music, like the Mamas and the Papas and the Supremes and all these just wonderful, fantastic music as a very young kid. And my brother, 4 years older, was heavily into the Beatles, so I have a lot of love for the Beatles. But nothing really beats out the Supremes, and this specific song, I listen to it all the time. I want to play it at if I ever have a wedding, that would be great. And you know, when I die, you know, it should be the song that is played because it's just an expression of such incredible joy, and you know, lives, you know, certainly my life and many others, many most people that live on the earth. You know, your life is filled with disappointments and pain and sadness,
right.
But there's also these moments of unbounded joy, of revelation and completion and closure and unexpected surprises and love when you didn't think that you could be loved, and you have these moments of just incredible joy, and the song really reflects that for me.
There you go.
It puts me into a good mood even when I'm just down in the dumps.
Will Clark, how the heck are you going to transition to the next song choice? I'm fascinated now. I love putting these together in an order that I determine. How then would we say that Adele's Didn't We Almost Have It All? What does that say about Will Clark? Right after we just talked about moments of joy in I Hear a Symphony.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's a very powerful song.
Yeah.
It's got a very strong message and it's got a very strong voice. And the emotion is so raw and it's just so primal and it's just full of agony and delicious agony at that.
Right.
And there's something about it, you know, again, we've all had relationships that didn't quite work out, and it's a very sad thing, no matter how you slice it, no matter how it ended.
Yeah.
It's sad. I mean, it's sad and it's a disappointment and your heart breaks. And the song, for some reason, just seemed to really hit the right note for me at this time in my life. So I don't know if in 20 years it will still have the same presence of being like one of my favorite songs of all time. But it right now is such a presence in my life, and it really, it just gives such power.
Yeah. Trust me, Will, I'm there with you right now. I am there with you. This will be the first show. Is Ken crying? So here's the fun part. Delicious agony, by the way. I mean, you could you have the one sentence bio, you have the full bio. You could totally on your website put Will Clark : delicious agony.
Delicious agony, yes.
Just putting that out there. I'm here to help, Will. I'm here to help. And then,
you
requested a song that we can indeed do from this week's episode, the season premiere of Glee, which I have not seen yet, so don't ruin anything for me, Will. I will be watching it tomorrow. Why did you select It's Not Unusual, the Glee version, to reflect Will Clark?
You know, that was totally like a gut feeling. And again, I don't know if in 10 or 20 years that will be something that'll be in my top 5 songs. I really doubt it. But Darren Criss's performance of it, like his performance of, what was that song that his debut song last year, that was such a hit, such
Teenage
a runaway
Dream.
Hit. Teenage Dreams.
Yeah.
This, in my opinion, this is comparable in energy and in power and in strength and in production and in execution to that in a much different way. But it's such an expression of joy and, incredible freedom. And, without giving too much away, it occurs in the moment of the show where it just is such a beautiful moment. And so it's not necessarily the song. It's really more like what's happening what's happening during the song and what the song and the moment really represents in the history of the show, and for that character. And he wears a polo shirt with a bow tie, and I think that will be... I can't pull that look off, but Darren Criss can, and I'm very excited for him.
We all are. Well, now I'm going to be thinking about you when I watch that segment, so I'm excited to see that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, Will Clark, where can folks go to learn all the cool things that you're doing?
Well, you can go to willclarkworld.com. It's my blog. And I post lots of various things. I post some commentary on political issues. I post videos. I post history of my own. I post bingo notices about who's coming up, who's next. I have a deep love for animation, so I talk a lot about that. I post some animation that I come across that's independent animation that I really love. There's some sexy guys. I posted a little thing a couple weeks ago about Brent, the Safelite guy, because I found him really hot, and I found the video online, and I did a little research, and I found that he's an actual real employee of the Safelite organization, and it makes me want to go. I think he's in like Tacoma, Washington, or something like that. It makes me want to go to Tacoma, Washington, and throw a rock through my rental car.
Nice.
Just so Brent from Safelite will come out and hang out with me for a minute. And it's bizarre that, like, if people search for Brent from Safelite, actually my website is like in the top 10.
That's in the top hilarious. 10 Look how Google. You're helping.
I'm helping Brent establish some sort of notoriety. I'm sure he'll be very grateful. said with dripping sarcasm. But I am hoping that maybe, you know, see, I do these things, and I hope that in some universe at some point, Brent from Safelite comes out and says, oh, I'm gay, I'm going to New York, I'll be on your show.
So nice.
That's I've written a letter to Kathy Griffin on my blog at one point, hoping that it would get to her attention. I have a couple guests that I would if I could ever get them to be even on for like 10 minutes, I would die a happy man. And Kathy Griffin is one of them.
Nice.
Chelsea Handler is another one, and the other one is Amy Sedaris. If I could get any one of those three to be on for even a second, I would be like, okay, great, we can stop the show right now, and I can go home and die because I'm done.
Look at that. We're going to make it happen. We will help you make that happen here at this show.
Well,
so good.
Not the dying part.
Okay, we don't want to help that.
I'm just saying that for effect.
Let's be clear. You are hilariously fun. You are putting out content to the world that is bringing people together, having tons and tons of fun. You're making people smile. I really do think that you're helping people communicate, too. I think you are helping people communicate about some really important life conversations. And to be clear, you have raised hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years for organizations that desperately, desperately need these funds. I want to live in Will Clark world.
Thank you. Well, it is it's a really great feeling. I've been actually interviewing for like day jobs lately. And when they say, well, you do this really exciting show, why would you want to work for us? Because we just do this thing, and it's, they're all like, they're not necessarily not-for-profits, but they make the world a better place.
Right.
And that's what I'm drawn to. And I used to think, oh, I'll be a corporate person and, make a lot of money, and I just keep getting drawn to organizations that really help people. And, there's really no finer feeling in the world than going to bed at night and thinking, wow, I actually did something today to make a difference. And I feel like I have earned my existence today, and that's really a great feeling.
Yeah.
And to know also that the money that I've raised for various organizations may or may not be the difference between them staying open or closing, but it sure does help somebody keep their job. It sure does help a client, get a service. It certainly helps a bill getting paid, and that we're part of the whole cog, the whole machine of how this stuff works. And we really have to help each other, especially in the last couple of years when, money is down to organizations and they're really struggling and scrambling just to stay open. And
absolutely.
There are a lot of really wonderful organizations out there, like the Anti-Violence Project here in New York City. That's just is one of my favorite organizations. And Breaking the Cycle, which helps, basically everything that they raised from the 300-mile bike ride from New York, sort of from Boston to New York. The $400,000 that they raised this Sunday over the last couple of weeks, that goes to to fund the HIV/AIDS services at New York's Gay and Lesbian Center. I don't believe that there's any other money that comes from anywhere else for that particular services. So this is it. And when you know that, it's really an amazing and a large responsibility to know, oh, you know, this is the difference between some gay teen coming out and, you know, serial converting and needing counseling and it sort of being there or not being there.
Right.
And that is really an incredible responsibility. Just speaking of that, we raise, I do an annual boat party with some porn stars stripping and fun. It's really great. Between that and 14 weeks of bingo and matching funds and people being very generous, we raised $23,300 this summer just for breaking the cycle from June to last week. September 7th. So we really, you know, people really came out, really supported, and we really worked it hard. And it's really, when they presented the check for $400,000, I was like, oh, I actually have a sizable percentage of that.
Yeah, you do.
It's kind of nice, you know. It's really kind of a thing. And then to know how many people came out and how many stars donated at the time for the summer. And, you know, we all just have a great time together, and it's great to be able to raise money in a really fun environment. And I love my job because I can actually drink on the job and actually nobody says anything. So
there you go. Well, I'm hearing a symphony right now, Will Clark.
Yeah,
It is truly. And you are someone, there is so much more we can talk about. Can I guarantee that we're going to have you back on the show?
Anytime you want.
Will, an absolute pleasure having you on the show. For the love of God, please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Will.
Take care.
You've given me a true love, and every day I thank you, love, for a feeling that's so new, so inviting, so exciting. Whenever you're near, I hear a symphony, a tender melody, pulling me closer, closer to your arms. Then suddenly,
everybody, and welcome back. More to do. But first, I ask that you do something with me. Close your eyes. Close your eyes for a second, folks. And I know if you're not closing your eyes, I can see. It's radio. I can see. Imagine a school where you can be you, where your friends share similar experiences and similar questions, where you can get a high-quality education while receiving comprehensive support from adults and peers, where all staff members genuinely want to work with you because of who you are, even if you're not sure. Open your eyes. If this sounds right to you, then you should know about the GLBTQ Online High School. And here to talk about the incredible work going on there is the executive director, David Glick. David, welcome to this show, Is So Gay.
Thanks, Ken. Good to be here.
Now, I should say, to be technical, I should say welcome back to this show, Is So Gay, technically.
But it's true.
We're going to pretend that this is your first time. But for longtime listeners, you know that about a year and a half ago, we had a great chat with Executive Director Glick. See how formal we're going to go now?
It's going to be a little crazy. That is formal. I'm not used to that.
I know. You'll get used to it by the end of this. But then there was some technical difficulty. But now he's here, and so it's really the first time. How the heck are you?
Doing great, thanks.
So much to talk about for folks who are saying, what, an online high school for the gays? I don't understand. Give us the spiel.
Well, the spiel's pretty easy. I mean, you started with one of our introductory pieces, which is really we strive to be a safe school for all kids and also provide the various kinds of supports that students might need to succeed. A lot of students might not have been so successful at their previous school, and we want to help them get there.
How do you find them, or do they find you?
Well, that's been a challenge.
Yeah.
Enrollments have been low, and we are getting the word out every way we can, including, of course, doing shows like this one.
Great.
We've gotten quite a lot of publicity. One of our challenges, of course, is getting people to make the transition, well, two major transitions. One, from public school to private school. We are a private school to so that we don't get any tax dollars and don't get into some political battles that would follow from that.
Right.
And so making the transition from not having to pay for an education to actually paying, and then, of course, transitioning from typically a bricks and mortar school to an online school. There's a lot of people out there that still aren't familiar with virtual schools and how commonly they're used around the country and how accepted they have become.
So I am a lesbian. God, I don't think I've ever said that before. But so I'm a 16-year-old lesbian, and I'm living wherever it is I'm living in Wisconsin, and I'm just having a really rough time at school, and I want to go to the online high school. What would my high school experience even look like?
Well, that depends whether you want to take classes full-time or part-time.
Okay.
We do work both ways. If it's a full-time experience for you, then, you know, you're gonna sleep till noon because you're a 16-year-old, and that's how their metabolism works. And then you're going to get up, and you're going to go to the computer and check all of your different courses and see what your teachers have sent you and see what your peers have sent and check discussion boards and all of those kinds of things. Then you're going to get back to your own work. They're self-paced courses, and so there's a lot of instruction built right into the courses.
Okay.
And, of course, if you have any difficulty at all, you just give a holler to your teacher, who works with you on an individual basis at your own pace to move through the courses as slowly or quickly as your own particular skills, interests, and time schedule allow.
What inspired you to do this?
That's always a tough question to answer. I've been an educator for forever, for my entire adult life, 26, 27 years, and have been interested for the last 15 years or so in disenfranchised populations and in really bringing high-quality education to places and people who don't otherwise have it. I've been in the virtual school world for over 10 years now, as I saw that as one of the tools for doing this. And now that the virtual school world has matured to the point where sort of your average, everyday, try-to-be-everything-to-all-people virtual school is really, there's a lot of those. They're up and running. We know how to do that. It's really become quite routine and is growing quickly. That's about when I start getting bored with things and looking for other ways to apply my skills and my interests. And so I sort of married my interest in GLBT issues and disenfranchised populations with the virtual school at the same time with of course, all that we read about the bullying and the harassment and the, you know, the suicides, all of that stuff. It seems to me to be a perfect coming together of not only all of my interests, but really filling a need that that was pretty clear out there. And so I talked with a lot of other people, and they agreed that this was something that we needed. And so the rest, as they say, is history.
Because I got to be honest with you, and let's be clear, I have a PhD in educational administration. This is what I do. I feel like I would have no idea how to do what it is that you're doing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, the virtual school world is a very different way of doing education, and I've been in it a long time. I wrote the big national organization in virtual schools is INACOL, INACOL.
Okay.
.org, and me and one other person, along with some advisory group, of course, wrote the How to Start an Online School website for that organization. And so, you know, nationally speaking, that's the world I live in, and I'm very involved in that on a national level. And although you never feel like an expert in anything, or I never do, some people might refer to me as an expert in virtual schools. And so most educators don't know much about virtual schools. So, you know, we're ahead of the game, but that's where we should be.
So what you're saying is you couldn't really use me right now.
I'm sure that we could find a use for you, Ken.
What are the teachers like?
The teachers are all highly qualified teachers.
But
they're
that I
gathered
assumed.
Around the country. We've got about 16 teachers in all the major subject areas, and they're all part-time teachers. That is, they all are working usually for another school full-time. Or part-time, and as we get students in, we call up the teacher and say, you're ready for an enrollment. Because we function on an open enrollment basis, it's very easy for teachers to take on another enrollment really at any time. Students can join at any time, and so it's all on per enrollment.
Okay. So you talked about some of the challenges. Enrollment is a challenge. What other unexpected things have come up that you've had to deal with?
Some of the kids that have come to us initially had issues that were really more severe than we had anticipated, and we were able to connect with some counseling services and things. But you know, some fairly significant mental illness issues, mental health issues, based on some of the harassment that they had endured in middle school or high school. Some of those students were not able to stick with us for long. In one case, the experience of just doing homework was such a reminder of the trauma that she experienced at school that she was unable to continue.
Wow.
The post-traumatic stress syndrome and related things really got in her way. So there have been some of that, but really the funding and the enrollments are our primary challenges, especially in this economy. You know, getting significant donations and getting people to decide to pay for an education has been our biggest two challenges.
Well, one creative solution, it looks like, is the GLBTQ Studies course.
Absolutely. We're really excited about that. We'll be launching that. The first classes will run starting in January. We have written, I'm the co-author of that, we've written the world's first online course for high school students in GLBTQ studies. And this is a course that, it's not an anti-bullying course, it's more of a cultural course. So we look at the history and culture, the major historical events, the major issues in the GLBTQ community. And we take a very affirming stance, but at the same time, try to respectfully present other sides of the issues as well.
And I want to take the course.
Great.
There you go. We just signed somebody else up right in that moment.
Well, you know, we actually expect a lot of teacher interest and educator interest.
That would be great.
We are running both adult sections and student sections of that starting in January.
Oh, I think that's great. I think that is great.
So you actually could take the course. And, you know, naturally we want to keep the adults separate from the kids because the discussions may take different angles. But we definitely recognize the need for and the desire for a lot of adults to take that course too.
Yeah, well, and I think it's important. I think that the adults are the constant in our brick-and-mortar schools. And so if they are educated, we can actually pass that on from year to year. Whereas,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of schools they're dealing with the anti-bullying curriculum and they're dealing with the GSAs and all that, and that's all wonderful stuff. But before this, nobody's really taken sort of the more academic approach to it and say, hey, what are we really talking about here? And if you read the articles in the paper, you listen to the discussions, and people talk past each other. They don't even really know how to have the discussion, and it's like GLBTQ-ness is just this one big blob, and you're either for it or against it. And we want to sort that through a little bit. And so we talk about, you know, religious perspectives on GLBTQ issues, and we talk about historical and different cultures and how different cultures view GLBTQ issues.
This sounds such good stuff. This is good stuff. And lest anyone be confused, I remember you telling us the first time on the show, and not that we can prove it because that audio is gone, but that there are all of these components that people would expect to find in any other high school that you could walk into. Was there not a phys ed requirement type thing?
Absolutely. Yes. We have a full curriculum, including the PE, which, you know, looks a lot more like a personal fitness plan,
great,
for example, than your traditional PE class, which some people have described as glorified recess.
Okay. That looks good to me. Not you. And prom?
Well, when we have enough students to manage something like that, we can try it. Absolutely.
Let's try it. And I can chaperone.
Sure.
I want to DJ. Can I DJ the prom? I don't know how to do that.
Wouldn't
I'll just chaperone.
That would be fun. That would be great.
So what do we need to do? So we need to get the word out, right? We need to get the word out that this is a place where folks can go.
That's right. And I think, you know, the GLBTQ studies course is really where we're putting a ton of our efforts right now. And if people can donate, great. But you know what? I'd rather have them sign up for the course.
Okay. Well, that's and where do folks go to learn more about the course?
The school website is glbtqonlinehighschool.com. And you'll see links right away for the GLBT studies class. Registration for the January sections will open on November 1st. So
okay.
We're not quite
November
there yet.
But we're almost there, so people can start emotionally preparing themselves to register.
Exactly. Tuition, by the way, is we're doing an introductory rate of $325 for the semester course.
Can we say that if they mention this show is so gay, they can get it for $320?
Sure. Sure, I'll write him a personal check for $5 as a refund.
I'll do it. I hereby vow that if you want to take the course, This Show Is So Gay is currently offering scholarships. They are $5 scholarships to take the course if you send us an email at thisshowisogay@aol.com. How's that?
Excellent.
I love it. Cross-promotion.
There you go.
Well, we want this to work. We want this for people to see this is a route, and this is a route where certain students can flourish.
That's an important point. You know, we've never said that we're right for all kids, and we're never, you know, going to be right for all GLBTQ kids, but we think it's an important option that frankly didn't exist before 2 years ago.
Well, and isn't that the thing? Isn't that the piece where people are confused? They're not confused because it's not a worthwhile project. They're confused because we get confused when there's new things, when there's a different path towards the end goal that we all want of students who are taking charge of their own education, which is what we all want.
Exactly.
So, all right. Well, we want you to keep us posted on how this is going.
I will certainly do that, and I'll be sure to send you an email or find you on Facebook when those registrations actually open on November 1st.
Please do.
I'm going to hold you to your word that you're going to be a student in this class.
Okay. Well, definitely hold me to my word that we're offering the TSISG scholarships for the course. I'm very excited about this new initiative that hopefully won't cost me too much money. But for you, I hope it costs me a ton.
There you go.
So this is great. I've long been an admirer of the work you're doing, and please let us know what we can do to support you further.
Well, thanks so much, Ken. Really appreciate your having me on again. It was great talking with you.
All the best.
Thanks.
Bye. All right, that about wraps things up for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. Thanks so much for listening. Drop us a line at thisshowisogay@aol.com, strolling over to thisshowisogay.com, and click on the iTunes link. Subscribe on iTunes. We love new subscribers on iTunes, and we love, love, love when you go to iTunes and you take 16 seconds to write a comment about your love for this show. It helps us, and it makes you feel good. Trust me. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, and like us. Get out there, folks. Go do some amazing, incredible things. Use your voice in whatever way you know how to use your voice to create the equality that you want to see. And while you're doing that, while you're doing amazing things, while you're using your voice, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay? Love will never do.